Oh, that was loud. Good afternoon. It is Wednesday, March 29th, and the Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. Welcome. Thank you to everybody for coming today. We have two bills and an informational meeting today, and I wanted to say a couple of things about the logistics for today. The first thing is many thanks to those who helped describe the accommodations that were needed today, and to Matt and Corey and Information Services and Legislative Administration Services for working to bring these things together. We have multiple kinds of accommodations in the room and a lot of people working to make sure that this hearing is accessible to everyone, a way that we can all help with that at the dais. And for those that are offering testimony is to be sure to not speak too fast and be able to articulate clearly as well. And then for those that just general etiquette when speaking with people who are using interpreter support is obviously questions go to the person that is speaking and not to the interpreter. So those are the logistics for the day, and I am very excited about this hearing. So I am going to open up an informational hearing on. Sorry, I just saw this deadline thing at the top. An informational hearing on the community needs assessment for deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians. And I'd like to invite up Dr. Denise Thu Hackett and Dr. Cheryl Davis, please. Welcome. And when you start, if you could please state your name for the record.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. We want to thank you so much for inviting us. My name is Cheryl Davis, and I am the director of the Regional Resource Center on Deafness at Western Oregon University and co-investigator of the Community Needs Assessment Project. And this is Denise Thu Hackett, and she is a faculty member at Western also in the Rehabilitation and Mental Health Counseling Program, and she was the principal investigator on the project. Denise?
Thank you for inviting us to come. I'm excited for this opportunity. So before I start, I just want to let you know a couple of my graduate students from the Rehabilitation and Mental Health Counseling Program are sitting back here as well. So they're watching their professor give this testimony.
Just a moment. Wait. We can't dim the lights that much. That won't work for our
Okay.
Access.
We need to not dim the lights because that makes it hard to see the interpreters. So thank you. Thank you. Please.
So my students from the graduate program are taking a class on diversity that I taught, and so now it's a nice opportunity for them to come and see all of the diversity that we have here in this room. I'd like to start with self-disclosure in terms of who I am as the principal investigator behind this project. I think it's important to understand my background. I was born hearing, and I became deaf at the age of 2 from meningitis, and I lost 100% of my hearing at that time. I was put into an oral-based program focused on hearing and speech, and that's definitely challenging for a person like me who had no hearing at all at that point. Throughout my educational process at 12, I learned sign language and then was mainstreamed the entire time that I was in school. The sign language that I learned at 12 was Signing Exact English, which is an English-based sign system, and it's very different than American Sign Language, which I'll explain a little bit later. Later in life, I learned American Sign Language and realized how much information I had missed. Through my upbringing, I also did not have deaf or hard of hearing mentors. I didn't have adults. I didn't grow up knowing what my future could look like. I was always internally motivated, having high expectations for myself and big dreams, but having a lack of mentorship was an oppressive experience for me. Throughout my education, I continued and got my doctorate in clinical psychology and also had a postdoc fellowship in research through an NIH grant. Through my research and clinical training, I worked specifically with the deaf and hard of hearing populations and hearing populations as well. So throughout that experience, I can understand how to look at things from multiple lenses. And I bring that to this particular project. I believe that I'm the best person in Oregon to guide this particular project in the community needs assessment. So I was thrilled for the opportunity. Okay, next slide. So this is the actual community needs assessment report. I'm not sure if you've had an opportunity to read this yet or not. So this picture of an iceberg that you see here on the PowerPoint represents this particular report. This report is the tip of the iceberg. Because I only had 8 months to start and complete this particular research project, and that was to encompass the entire state of Oregon. So I imagine if I had had more time, I would have collected many more stories, much more data on barriers that are represented below the surface in this iceberg picture. So this report represents the voice of deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians. And I am the bridge for that to you. So I collected their stories and I'm sharing them with you in terms of what the experience of deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians looks like right now. I remember my first focus group, and I will never forget the first focus group that I did because of this particular quote that came to light. There was a woman in her 40s who used sign language, and she signed that she was terrified to grow old in the state of Oregon. That's a sad thought. As she looked into her future, she could only foresee her quality of life diminishing because of the barriers for Oregonians. And that's not what we want. That's not what we want for our Oregonians, and we don't want them to think that about their future. And it wasn't a one-time thing. It was a common theme throughout the stories in the focus groups that I ran. And that had a profound impact on me. As a clinical psychologist, I've learned how to protect myself from vicarious trauma. And throughout this particular process and this experience of hearing all these stories, I experienced vicarious trauma because I was hearing the same story repeated again and again everywhere I went throughout the state. And it made me wonder, it made me question myself if I should stay in Oregon. Is this a really good place for me to live? I had to think about that. And I had to employ a lot of the clinical psychology training tools that I actually teach to my clients, and I had to employ those strategies myself throughout this process. So in an 8-week period of time, I collected data all over Oregon, and these are the demographics of that. This is the story of these individuals represented on the slide. So 885 solid survey responses, 12 focus groups with hard of hearing population, 15 focus groups with deaf participants, 3 one-on-one telephone interviews, 4 focus groups with parents of deaf and hard of hearing children, and then we had a couple of key informant interviews with service providers. We had 19 of those. And that's a lot of data to receive in 8 weeks. And remember, please, that this is just the tip of the iceberg. So in terms of the larger overview of findings, the community needs assessment shows that many deaf and hard of hearing individuals are in poverty, are unemployed, And if they are living in poverty, how can they afford the equipment or the technology that they need for accommodations? So, for example, a cell phone, in order to be able to text, costs a service fee every month. If an individual wants to use a video phone at home, they have to be able to pay for high-speed internet service. If they have hearing aids, they have to be able to pay for repairs and batteries. All of those things cost money. And if you are living in poverty, how do you afford those accommodations? Many of the deaf and hard of hearing individuals don't know their ADA rights. If they're unemployed, they don't know the process to file for an EEOC. They don't know how to navigate the legal system. It's really complicated, and we need to help them get through that process properly. Many of them also do not have access to mental health services. They experience barriers, multiple barriers, with mental health issues. For myself personally, I've experienced many issues growing up, having to deal with oppression. So the mental health services is actually related to HB 3415, which I hope will pass this legislative session. And that's separate from this bill, of course.
So I wanted to use the rest of our time to talk about the context for our recommendation of a center or a commission. And we have to recognize that people naturally see things through their own mindset. So, for example, a radio reporter defined atheists as people who don't believe in God. An atheist caller took umbrage with this and responded that atheists take the position that there are no deities, period, not that they don't believe in the gods that everybody else knows exist. And this is an excellent point. Unchecked, we interpret the world and those in it through our own perspective. I share this with you because most of us don't understand the functional impact of hearing loss, and we misattribute the reasons behind behavior that doesn't match our expectations. We often think that deaf means people need accommodations. Hard of hearing means people can get along okay if they just try hard enough. Hearing aids or cochlear implants return hearing to 20/20, like vision. All hard of hearing people speech read, and all deaf people sign. A mild hearing loss or a loss in one ear has little impact on functioning. People with less clear speech or atypical English use are less intelligent and less able to succeed in higher education and the workforce. Writing back and forth is an acceptable accommodation, no matter what material is being discussed or how long the meeting might be lasting. We tend not to realize that only about 35% of English phonemes are visible on the mouth. Background noise and poor acoustics have a high negative impact on an individual's ability to understand whether or not they are wearing hearing aids or cochlear implants. And this all contributes to people not understanding why someone might function just fine in one setting or with certain people, but need accommodations in others. These points only scratch the surface. The person sitting at the front door of each agency is a gatekeeper. What we heard over and over again was that if that person doesn't understand hearing loss, services to that individual are in jeopardy. So, we need a center or commission or some structure led by someone who is knowledgeable, unbiased, and sees the needs of all the different groups we were tasked with including in the CNA as equally important to provide leadership and strategy to produce systems change. Even though there are a few strong advocates working towards this now, it is not the same as having an impartial and knowledgeable person responsible for carrying out a strategic plan. Currently, there are some great things happening in some agencies and in some counties, but these activities aren't necessarily happening statewide. Access to services should be well planned, not haphazard. This kind of service provision has long been a complaint of people who are deaf and disabled. They often receive services only if there happens to be someone who takes a special interest in them, or if someone knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who might be able to get them into an environment where a trained person can work with them. In some cases, agency policies can create issues. For example, one state agency hired people who were deaf, ASL users, to train Oregonians in how to use specialized phone equipment. However, the hard of hearing Oregonians who don't use ASL were not able to communicate with them. When the issue was pointed out, it was resolved. An agency also required that a specific decibel level of hearing loss be present in order to qualify for services, but then ordered phones with amplification that was inadequate for that level of hearing loss. Again, when it was pointed out, it was corrected, and hard of hearing community members were invited to be a part of the advisory board. Another example is access to emergency services. And some counties have worked hard to ensure that deaf, hard of hearing, and individuals with speech and mobility disabilities have access to 911 call centers. This requires training for both the call takers and for the community, but it simply isn't consistent across the state. In some cases, services are completely missing. For example, support service providers are vital for individuals with dual vision and hearing loss, and for vision and for individuals who are deaf and disabled. They literally provide contact with the outside world, from providing transportation, communication access, access to information from the environment around them. People must rely on friends and family if they cannot afford the service themselves, thus depriving them of any sense of autonomy. In addition to SSPs, communication facilitators are vital to telephone use for the deafblind individual. They provide in-service assistance with auditory or visual messages from the phone or the screen. And while Oregon doesn't provide this service, some other states do. And for example, in Washington, there are funds set aside from the same telephone taxes that run their Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. In other cases, legislation itself creates barriers. For example, because the Oregon School for the Deaf cannot serve children younger than 5, they are unable to hold preschool there. Until recently, the TSPC, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, did not require that teachers of the deaf have sign language skills. Again, it took a few people recognizing this and making statements to make sure that this happened. Finally, some legislation just doesn't go far enough. Although there are regulations about hearing aid provision for children, so many Oregon families suffer from food insecurity and poverty. Needing to cover the deductible before the benefits kick in may make hearing aids or hearing aid replacements out of the family's reach. It does not require that when hearing aids are fitted, the audiologist use real ear measures, which test whether the sound is getting to the eardrum the way it was intended when the hearing aid is actually worn. This means many hearing aids may be poorly fitted and not providing the benefit they could. For all of these reasons, we felt that it was important to have an organized effort to seek systems change rather than putting small individual pieces into place. Thank you for hearing our concerns. Denise, I believe you have the closing statement.
As I mentioned, I'm a professor at Western Oregon University, and I teach graduate level students, and there's a group of them here. Like the deaf and hard of hearing individuals in Oregon, they have put their hope into my hands through these interviews. And they actually said, for the first time in my life, someone has actually heard my story and documented it. So this CNA report is documentation. It is evidence. It is data about the barriers that exist for deaf and hard of hearing individuals in the state of Oregon, and it's the tip of the iceberg. They have put their hope in my hands by sharing their stories, and I'm giving that hope to you and putting it in your hands to make this their hope a reality. Please support the passage of this bill through the completion of the process. so that future deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians can say this is the best place to live, that Oregon is the best place to live, not be terrified of growing old in the state of Oregon. We want this to be the best place for people to live.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there any... We've got so many people that we want to hear from today, so I'd like to keep questions brief. Are there any brief questions? No, thank you so much for doing this assessment and for taking time to come today to present it. And I think you'll have people coming behind you on this bill and several others throughout the building in the next few weeks that will address a number of the issues that you're raising and concerns that you've raised. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And with that, I am going to close the informational meeting on the community needs assessment, and I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1018.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1018 establishes the Oregon Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Program within the Department of Human Services. It establishes the Oregon Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Committee to administer the program. It specifies components of the program and the duties of the committee. It becomes operative January 1st, 2018, and the bill takes effect 91st day following signee die.
Thank you. And we're going to start with Chad Ludwig, Stephen Brown, and David Veers, please. Welcome.
Who is beginning testimony?
You can choose, and before you start, so that nobody feels picked on, because there is another hearing and we need to move all of the equipment to another hearing room, we actually do have to stop at 2:45. So keep that in mind as you're offering your testimony so that we make sure that everyone that's come today to share words gets the chance to do so. Right? But any of you are welcome to start.
Okay, I will go ahead and start. Wonderful to see you all again. My name is Stephen Brown. I am the Vice President of Oregon Association of the Deaf and a registered lobbyist. I would like to make a brief summation and explain why I'm here. First, I want to thank you for your support. I appreciate your time listening to Denise Thew Hackett's presentation. I really appreciate this. This is a very emotional time, and it's so emotional for everyone. I can see that. I agree with Mr. McCormick from DHS with his amendments. I do agree with those. That being said, I feel that we do need to pass that bill without those amendments. I think either of those would be appropriate, but I do recommend a due pass on this. This is a priority for us, regardless of if those amendments are accepted or not. I do agree with Senator Lori Mons Anderson with the recommendations for those amendments in regards to advising DHS and that DHS should be running that program. DHS has also established Oregon Revised Statute, and that's been going on for 2 or 3 years now. And that committee has been established by the OAR rules. And finally, that has been passed, and the membership has been explained for that committee, and I am hopeful that once those statutes are in place, that the amendments will be applied to the bill and that we don't need to start this whole process. This process has taken 2 years in regards to those specific OAR rules. So those are my comments related to the amendments suggested on this bill. One other thing I'd also like to discuss is certification for interpreters. I understand that this bill requires a program to work with Oregon Department of Education, and I would like to suggest that that is referred to Oregon Health Authority, which is another state agency. And in the future, I would encourage you to set up some type of certification. The state of Oregon does not currently require certification for sign language interpreters. And that is shocking to me. That is something that needs to change. I'm very hopeful that that will be amended to this bill, but I do want to emphasize that quality interpreters should be mandatory in addition to certified. The state of Oregon currently doesn't require certification for interpreters, which is very shocking, and I strongly encourage you to consider that. I also want to thank you for your support, and I do recommend that you pass and recommend this to a full vote. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Do you, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those as well.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Senator Gelser and members of the committee. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here and for allowing us to share the community perspective on this important bill. Senate 1018, the purpose of this, we have already discussed. In regards to the community needs assessment, I really want to thank you for providing the opportunity to do the research from the 2015 legislative session. That report has been heartening, and we have learned a lot. Outside in the hallway, just previously, there were two hearing members of Oregon Association of the Deaf, Connie and Logan. Two of those individuals were asking people about this specific situation. And we asked people this question. We asked, what do you think that hearing people think of you? Because the bottom line really is the attitude behind this, the attitude of oppression, and that influences the ability to get services. The people who have shown up here today in this room, when they approach a hearing person, that hearing person has internal dialogue with themselves. Does that person have a cochlear implant? Do they have hearing aids? Does that person work? That person makes gestures like an animal. Often hearing people feel afraid of deaf and hard of hearing individuals. People have said, are they thinking I'm a freak? Am I expensive to the system? There's been a lot of comments from these people. Some people think that hearing people said, hearing people can't think that I can't do the work, that I'm not independent, that I'm incompetent. They pity me. That I'm dumb. Those are different things that deaf individuals have said and posted to this board. This is what we face every day. And these are people who are trying to provide services. When we approach these hearing people, they see this frame of deafness. They see these judgments. And that frustrating experience is experienced by deaf and hard of hearing people every day. And that frame follows us everywhere. It's automatic. So really, by seeing this frame, you see what we experience every day. And with this bill, we are hoping to improve the quality of life and access to services. We are hoping to improve access to get what we truly deserve. The community needs assessment fully supports this. And the community needs, well, the bill will help us break down that negative stigma. There are many amendments that people have proposed, but they don't realize the damage that it could do to our community. Our community needs more. This is just a starting point and a place forward to move forward. So we need your help to make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is David Veers. I am testifying on behalf of Senate Bills 1018 and 1023. I support these bills with some reservations. First, a bit about myself. I wore hearing aids for more than 30 years when I made the decision to get bilateral cochlear implants. I am completely deaf, but identify as hard of hearing. I've been working with people with hearing loss, both deaf and hard of hearing, for more than 30 years, either in a volunteer capacity or professionally. I've worked at three nonprofits focused on hearing loss. By the way, I prefer the term people with hearing loss when discussing this population because it covers the entire gamut and avoids the deaf versus hard of hearing issues that sometimes show up. My concerns about this bill. First, how does a committee of people with no apparent expertise, aside from having a particular disability, professionally administer a program? At most, such a representative group of people with hearing loss should be advising the staff of this new program. Secondly, this committee has only one-third of its membership being hard of hearing. But the reality is that of the overall population we are looking at, well over 95% fall into this category. There have been issues in the past of tunnel vision occurring where all of the problems slash solutions of an issue are viewed through the prism of one aspect of a particular disability. Because while deaf and hard of hearing face a common problem, hearing loss, the solutions on how to overcome the communication barrier facing us are very different. The focus in this bill on sign language interpreters with no mention of captioning, assistive listening devices, or other accommodations is a prime example of this. Finally, a huge focus of this program seems to be on conducting studies. We already know from the numerous published studies already done and confirmed by the community needs assessments just conducted by Western Oregon University that people with hearing loss face a number of challenges. It would seem to me that the focus should instead be on providing relief to this population through direct services, that is to say, via specialists that can educate people in technology, coping skills, communication strategies, and other methods. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Senator Anderson?
Just a comment. This bill is very important to me. And I will hope that some version of it is going to get down to Ways and Means. And we are working on amendments. We have not had them published yet.
That's what I was looking at.
Yeah, the amendments have not been published yet. We have not given direction because we keep getting changes that need to be made. So I just wanted to put that on the record and know that we have neglected the deaf community for too many years, and we must go forward with a strategic plan, and this is certainly the right direction to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'll look forward to seeing those amendments.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mitchell Turbin, Clark Anderson, and Mark Hill. Welcome. And any of you are welcome to start.
Okay, I'll be going first. Chair Gelser. Members of the committee. I would like to introduce myself. My name is Mark Hill. I'm the leader of a national organization focused on best practices for individuals with CP. And I'm specifically speaking of deaf individuals who have CP, cerebral palsy. We also work with mobile disabilities as well. But today, I'm speaking as an Oregon resident. in front of this committee. I also serve on Oregon Association of the Deaf's Legislative Committee. On behalf of Senate Bill 1, on behalf of 186,000 deaf, hard of hearing, and deaf-blind citizens with disabilities. As a deaf resident with cerebral palsy, I fully support this bill. And I would like to testify during this hearing, and I would like to say thank you to the legislature for funding the community needs assessment. As you saw, the report from the community needs assessment. And all the research that took place at Western Oregon University. From the report, you can see the serious lack of services. Related to those who are deaf and have hearing loss. Senate Bill 449A took place 2 years ago with the same committee members who are seated here today. In the census of the state of Oregon and throughout the United States, statistics on people with cerebral palsy didn't exist. There were no statistics on deaf people with cerebral palsy. I happen to be the president of that organization, but I'm not speaking on that behalf today. The community needs assessment found that one in four deaf people have cerebral palsy. Compared with the larger general population, which is one out of every 500 individuals at birth. You see a big difference between deaf individuals with CP and those who are not deaf. The community needs assessment in regards to this bill and Bill 1023, if those do become legislation, those bills will help us provide better opportunities. They help us will receive services. I used to work as a unit director in the community sector. I worked in a very small rural state. In a small branch office. For a for-profit organization. That organization focused on providing services to deaf and hard of hearing individuals. It provided information, referrals, and resources, advocacy, and other services in order to make sure those people were successful. To be full-fledged citizens. Based on my professional experience and what I've seen thus far, this is a reality, and individuals need to have services. Deaf, deafblind, hard of hearing individuals, citizens need to have services, and other people with additional disabilities. There is no question about how important this is. This will be able to help other agencies and ensure that those agencies have a better understanding of how to work with deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing consumers through education, by providing a office space provided by this office, once again, I would just like to say, let's break this glass ceiling. Let's bust through. And the opportunities are out there. And we have an opportunity to provide those without paternalism. And we in the community refer to that paternalism as autism and ableism. I strongly encourage you as a committee to recommend a do pass on this important bill, on Bill 1018. I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll go through the rest of the panel first before we get to questions. Thank you, sir. Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Dr. Mitch Turbin. My PhD is from the University of Oregon, and I retired recently as a research psychologist from the Portland VA. I also have Usher syndrome 3, with lifelong progressive losses of both vision and hearing, and I have chaired the Oregon Deafblind Services Task Force for the past 5 years. I support Senate Bills 1018 and 1023, but with reservations. The community needs assessment supports what we advocates said last session. Only with multiple services will Oregonians who are deaf, hard of hearing, deafblind, or who have hearing loss and additional disabilities be able to fully participate in our state's bounty. However, the communication modalities and required services of our groups may differ, although they may overlap. And there's the rub. Our diverse group of stakeholders have partnered equally and mutually supported our different priorities. But the RFP issued to award the CNA let us down. The RFP lacks sufficient attention to the needs of those who are hard of hearing but are not deaf. Doctors Hackett and Davis did their very best to compensate for those errors, and I applaud their work. But we see the same errors again in Senate Bill 1018. We've been told that there will be amendments, and we will work through the administrative rules later. But I'm no longer happy to depend on promises, because I feel that promises have been broken before. A point, I don't wish to be combative or unpleasant, but I just heard that the deaf community has been neglected too long. And that's a comment that unfortunately disappoints me. I will enthusiastically support Senate Bill 1018 when I see real improvements. In order to gain my full support, these bills must comprehensively address the full range of communication and other important services for the whole population of people with hearing loss, not just, for example, ASL interpreters for the sighted deaf group. I want to see a rebalancing of the advisory committee. Better balance among the disability groups is needed, but also more inclusion of qualified professionals with experience in providing services, including administration, supervision, and research. As for funding, I'm not really sure where this money is going to be used. What professionals are going to be paid, not just advocates, to administer and supervise this new program? We need more details about the services that are going to be paid for by these funds. Again, thank you for this opportunity. I'm available for questions today and can be contacted by email or phone at the information that's listed on my printed testimony.
Thank you very much.
Hi, and thank you for having this bill to be heard. I think it's a very important bill, and like Mitch, I support it in the idea of it and some of the major concepts, but I too have reservations. My name is Clark Anderson. I'm retired from work in hospital healthcare administration and have a PhD and an MBA. I'm a member of the Oregon Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Advisory Committee. I'm also president of two organizations that have a goal of meeting or advocating for the needs of the hard of hearing, the Hearing Loss Association of Oregon and Oregon Communication Access Project, which together represent hundreds of hard of hearing people. I identified as being hard of hearing, having had a progressive hearing loss, and want to be able to communicate with the greater hearing population as well as other hard of hearing people. And those two groups hardly ever know sign language, so sign language interpretation is really useless to us. When hearing aids no longer worked for me, I got two cochlear implants. But even with these devices, I have trouble understanding speech without assist for listening technology, as you can see, and captions. My comments follow. The references throughout the document talk about sign language interpreter or interpretation. Should also include assistive listening devices, which we can use, captioning, like closed captioning and CART services. Their being omitted makes this bill a deaf-centric document.
Keep in mind that hard of hearing at 94% far outnumbers the deaf at 6% of the hearing population. In Section 3, they talk about the composition of the committee, and Mitch has already commented on that as well as David. I can only say that I think the deafblind should be assumed under the deaf category. Without that, two-thirds of the committee consist of deaf people, and it's sometimes very difficult to get the hard of hearing needs adopted in any committee structure. Use of the disability category deafblind should be assumed under the category of deaf. Hard of hearing people also are sometimes deaf, and we depend on visual cues very much like people who are deaf. So I think captioning especially has to be there, and I'm not sure what I was meaning there. In Section 3, it refers to the committee that includes the responsibility of the committee reviewing and conducting studies. And like David, I don't think that's an appropriate place for conducting research. I would substitute collecting, reviewing, and evaluating throughout the document. There is no indication that the committee will have the resources to conduct studies. To construct studies would be very expensive and require additional staffing, and consultants would be a much better use and a cost-effective use of the conduct of studies. There are references to sign language interpretation or interpreters throughout the document, and they also exclude auxiliary aids and services that the hard of hearing depend on. In terms of Senate Bill 1023, I very much support the continuation of the PUC administering the TDAP program and other programs that support the deaf and hard of hearing. And then the creation of a fund for hard of hearing, I don't support that. I don't see any value to the movement of funds from the PUC to a deafblind and hard of hearing fund. I oppose this transfer if for any reason it would jeopardize the PUC being able to effectively administer the TDAP program. I think the PUC should continue to administer that program, and my, as well as others' experience with TDAP, think the PUC has done a very good job. Also, the percentage ranging amount has been left blank, and it could range from 0% to 100%. It's unclear how much of that amount is required by the TDAP program and other programs that depend on this deaf and hard of hearing. There's nothing to prevent these funds to be diverted from existing program, PUC programs. I and many other hard of hearing people have benefited from this program, and there's no guarantee that the administration of the PDAP program would continue or that it would benefit by a change in administration. Thank you very much for hearing my comments.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you all very, very much. Are there any questions for this panel?
At a later date, I would like to hear. Well, I'd like to hear all of the testimony first, and then go through the bill with everybody. And
that would be great.
Yeah.
That would be really great. And I think my hope was to get through everyone that's here while we have all of the accommodations ready to go, and then we'll move on. I'm noticing most people are addressing both bills as you're coming up, so I think we're doing okay on time, unless we have to bring everybody back up again.
Maybe we should open up.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and open up 1023 as well, just for the formality. So I'm simultaneously opening up a public hearing on 1023 with 1018. No, we'll come back to it later. All right. So next we have Philip Wolf. I think that's what that says. Yes, Philip Wolf and Chad Benke and Jeb Baldridge. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Jeb Baldrige. I would like to discuss the comments that were made, the criticisms that were made by those with hearing loss. I object to some of the comments that were previously stated. I was born deaf. I have never had a hearing loss. I identify as a deaf individual. National Association of the Deaf, they in 1996, they voted and to incorporate all of those terms under one term of hearing loss. There's been a lot of debate in the community about the terminology to be used, and there's really no solution about what the right terms are to define those individuals. Many deaf people who are culturally deaf feel that that is deaf is the most appropriate term. There are other groups who disagree about terminology, and I don't want to get bogged down with terminology and continue in that debate. I would like us to move forward. And I would like to express my support on both bills, and I'll turn it over to Philip. Hello, my name is Philip J. Wolf. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today. Senator Gelser, I remember we met 2 years ago, and we actually discussed this bill. I am here again, and members of the committee. Thank you for your teamwork on this bill. I would quickly like to summarize my background and then get down to discussing how this bill relates. I moved to Portland 6 years ago. I became highly involved with politics. I am a commissioner on Portland Commission on Disability since 2013. And I have helped write a directive for the city of Portland, which requires captioning to be left on the TVs at all times. So that is one of my biggest accomplishments. And I'm hoping that that will become a statewide requirement, but we're still working on that. I've had the privilege to live in many large cities, New York, Washington, D.C., California, Washington, Nevada. I currently reside in Oregon, and Portland is the most beautiful city I have ever seen. This is the first time I felt like I am home. It really has matched my vision and my dreams of the city that I would like to live in. But it is a difficult place to live in as a deaf individual, which creates a conflict for me, and that's where I come in as a political activist. I'm involved in many different organizations. And I am also involved with Deaf Grassroots Movement as one of their national reps. I would specifically like to talk about disability. Disability isn't the issue here. It's not the issue at all. The issue here is accessibility. I am labeled as disabled by many people, and I accept that designation, but it only is when I am when other people refuse to provide accommodations that I truly become disabled. I don't want to talk about what we can't do. I would like to talk about what you can do, what you as individuals with privilege can do. I would really like people to take the time to think about what they can do personally. How can they support to create equal access? How can deaf people rise to the quality of life that other people enjoy and those societal benefits that others enjoy in general? The deaf community is involved with shaping this vision for society. This bill I strongly support. hopefully by the time you have heard testimony, read research, and had discussion, you will be ready to move forward, and I hope that you will agree with me. The community needs assessment is a snapshot. It is a small point of data in a much larger picture. It does talk about the issue, but it is a small portion of the extreme complexity of daily life, the daily life of deaf people in regards to work and many other aspects of their life. In wrapping up, I would just like you to keep in mind that city leaders in the city of Portland tend to be white, they tend to be male, and they tend to be hearing and able-bodied. They tend to have political power and a lot of wealth. And we see this as a status quo. And that's not true only in Portland, but many other cities throughout Oregon. The problem is those people don't represent us. With this bill, we have the opportunity to switch things up. We have the opportunity to represent us. We have the opportunity to make sure that accommodations are met. We have the opportunity to really serve as a model and for other people to see our work and understand how better to support deaf and hard of hearing individuals. I really fully support that this bill be implemented. So I think that's all I have to say for now. Thank you very much. And of course, if you have more questions, feel free to ask.
Thank you so much, and it's really good to see you again.
Hello, my name is Chad Benke. I just moved here last September from Louisiana. I did grow up in Oregon. I'm a native Oregonian. I would like to say, so I've been living in Louisiana, and during that time, I was the alarms that they have. For example, if somebody shows up at the house and presses the doorbell, they have lights that flash to alert deaf people. That was a state-funded program that provided those equipment to deaf individuals. When I moved to another state, I had to give back that equipment. And now I am here in Oregon. I've contacted a few friends in the time that I've been back, and I ask, how can I get that kind of equipment? How can I get something to alert me if there's a fire or if the doorbell rings? And people didn't know where to access that information. And I was shocked. Oregon doesn't have anything like this. Oregon doesn't have any services that provide. What if I need an interpreter for a job interview? Do I have to contact a specific agency myself? We need a centralized location. One place where deaf individuals can get their needs met for survival. It's wonderful that people have autonomy and are able to live alone instead of depending on other people to tell you, oh, somebody else is at the door. I want to live alone. I want to live by myself. I want to feel more independent. And in order to do that, I need equipment. We need that equipment to be able to survive our everyday life. And that's all I really have to say. Thank you for your attention. I appreciate it.
Thank you all very much. Are there any questions for this panel? I'm seeing none. You're all doing a great job getting all the information out there.
And Madam Chair, I just want to briefly say Jeff Baldridge, and I know he's not looking at an interpreter right now. Let's wait till he looks. Jeff Baldridge. My sister is deaf, Jeff's father was classmates with my sister.
Right here.
Oh, is that Harry? Hi, Harry. Anyway, it's a small world, and I'm just delighted to have them here. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you.
That's fantastic. All right. Next, we have Jenny Lynn Dietrich, Mike McCormick, and Gerald Fleming Jr. Oh, hey, that's the Mike McCormick. Welcome to all of you. Please go ahead.
Please.
Oh. Would you like me to go, Chair Gelser?
Sure.
Chair Gelser, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike McCormick. I'm the Deputy Director for the Aging and People with Disability Program within the Department of Human Services. So Senate Bill 1018 requires the DHS director to appoint a committee of 9 volunteers and then empowers this committee of 9 volunteers to administer a pretty wide range of services. And that is a little bit unusual for state government. So while the department is officially neutral on this bill, we do recommend amendments in the event it advances so that the committee that's established under the bill advises the department on how to administer the program instead of the committee itself administering the program. I've uploaded my official testimony into OLAS, and I'm available for any questions you have.
Great. Thank you very much. And who'd like to go next?
Okay. Okay, hi. My name is Jenny Lynn. This is my name sign. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today and be heard by the committee. I was listening to the community needs assessment report, and I know there's been so much work done on that report. It's very impressive, and I understand that there's a very wide range of needs for the deaf community, deafblind community, and people who are hard of hearing. 3 years ago, I moved here from the state of Washington, and in the past, I worked for a deafblind service center that's in Seattle. I am deafblind myself, and I could provide understanding for those who I was providing case management for. A huge issue that we had there when we were in Washington State was accessibility for communication needs and assistance, as well as printed documents that were unable to be read by the community. They tend to be written in English. Many deaf people and deafblind people could not understand the written English text of government forms and documents due to language deprivation. So we would actually have to have people come in and help us fill out voting ballots, for example. And that removes our ability to be independent citizens. We want to be ourselves. We want to be able to vote by ourselves without judgment and interference by other individuals. That's a human right. I can't emphasize enough the sadness that I feel that us as deaf and deafblind individuals, that we basically have to scream for our own autonomy. That everyone depends on each other in the community in general, but we are screaming for our own independence and for our own autonomy, for our right to make fully informed decisions and choices. We're screaming for access. We are screaming for the right to understand what is going on so that we have the right and ability to make our own decision based on our understanding. The Deafblind Service Center that is set up in Seattle, Washington, that is its purpose, to give us as deafblind individuals the right to make our own decisions, to empower our clients. That was our purpose, so that deafblind individuals can do what we want and not be oppressed and have others make decisions for us. We need something like that here in Oregon very, very badly. It is critical. And I am not ignoring the needs of those who are deaf or those who are hard of hearing. Everyone needs this kind of accessibility to rights. We need service providers. We need sighted guides to help us make those decisions for ourselves. You know, for example, just going to the store, something simple, what kind of bread we have. I mean, I think, you know, it just to have that accessibility to say, well, let's see, I want whole wheat bread. And somebody comes into our lives and instead they're providing only white bread to us. And they say, sorry, you know, they don't want to bother taking the time. We'll just decide for you. And here you're going to have white bread for the rest of your life. And that's how it feels to have other people making decisions for us. It's not acceptable and it's not right. That's a basic human right that's being stolen from us, and it's oppressive. I've had enough. These two bills will greatly help us in our community, and we thank you so, so very much for giving us the opportunity to have these bills pass. It's not only our right as individuals, as persons, as human rights that are cherished, that are critical. So thank you so much for your time and for listening.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Gerald Fleming. I'm from Roseburg, Oregon, and I am a state representative for Deaf Grassroots Movement of Oregon. I represent over 660 members. And we want to say that since Executive Order 1501 was signed in February of 2015, the state of Oregon has required that we get services, but those services haven't yet been provided. So this is very overdue. I'm originally from Alabama, and when I graduated from high school, I had full access to American Sign Language, to vocational rehabilitation counselors who signed, to other service providers that provided sign language. When I moved here to Oregon 9 years ago, my father lived here, so I wanted to be near him. I realized the disparities between other states and Oregon. It is my hope that this bill will make Oregon the best place for deaf, deafblind, hard of hearing, deaf plus, all those other individuals with hearing loss. So I think that this bill is the answer to that.
Thank you all very, very much. Are there any questions for this panel? Nope. Thank you all so much. Next we have Robert Koenig and Corey Ezinal-Rick. Or something like that. All right, welcome
Hello.
To both of you. Hello. And either of you is welcome to start.
This is a great opportunity to be here. My name is Robert Koenig. I'm from Roseburg, Oregon, and I am deafblind. For Bill 1018, I would like to say my experience in my life, I have been working many, many different jobs. I've worked many jobs in the 18 years that I've been in Roseburg. I am not satisfied with the services that have been provided for a long time by Oregon Commission for the Blind. I started working a variety of different jobs. There were no interpreters provided. Those interpreters that were provided were not certified. Still today, this is a struggle. I struggle with vision, and I have been hurt in various different ways. I have fallen down on the job. I have, you know, worked through issues that I have come in contact with in my workplace because I needed to make a paycheck. There is no sighted guide. There's no interpreter. There's no support for deafblind individuals. It's a continual struggle. I'm here today to show my support on Bill 1018. I know many individuals who are deafblind are in a position that they shouldn't be. And I hope for the future for deafblind and hard of hearing individuals that they will have a better life. In regards to Bill 1023, I feel this is necessary for deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing individuals. It's essential that the specific accommodations required by those individuals are all met. I'll be happy again to see that happen. And the last thing that I'd like to say in regards to House Bill 3268, is I am strongly opposed. Telecommunications are very important for all of us who are deaf, deafblind, hard of hearing. It's important to have that communication access. I feel it violates our rights to not have that communication access. It's required by the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. So I just wanted to say that and say thank you very much for your time and for listening to my testimony.
Thank you very much.
Hello. Hello, Senators. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to be here today. This has truly been one of the most important days of my time in Oregon. I moved from Washington, D.C. metro area 13 years ago. It was actually the state of Virginia where I grew up, and in Massachusetts. I was born deafblind, so I have tunnel vision, and now my vision is quite limited. I moved here from Washington, D.C., as I said, and my husband, he got a job here, which is the reason for our relocation. He is the principal of the Oregon School for the Deaf, and he is the administrator of instruction. So he was the breadwinner, and I accompanied him across the country with our two children, and we've been here for 13 years. I have not had a luck finding a job. I've looked for many jobs, many state jobs, and the accessibility and the services just are not there. I have VR support, but unfortunately there's just not enough VR support for me to be able to seek the services that I need. And so my needs have been tremendously overlooked. I feel like I'm frustrated on a daily basis when my husband gets home. I'm telling him, you know, I don't want to be dependent upon Social Security disability. I don't want that to happen, you know. In Washington, D.C., there were so many jobs that I worked for a federal job, and there were about 500 federal employees who were deaf and or deafblind. And it was so gratifying just to be able to have a job to go to see this access, to have access to others, to have, you know, social opportunities at work. I mean, I think this isolation is just, it feels like we're drowning and it's kind of slogging through muck. So I really hope that you listen with open hearts to the needs of the deaf, deafblind, hard of hearing community. Because as many of us have said, the needs are there. I mean, the people are screaming to have their needs met. My husband sees it at Oregon School for the Deaf on a daily basis. You know, children who need language, need communication. You know, I mean, you have people who are in their 50s who are becoming senior citizens, and they are in dire need of access and services. And so I, right now, don't want to be dependent upon Social Security. I want to have the opportunity to work again and have that fulfillment that comes from self-employment. So my children are now college age. And I feel like it's time for me to be able to strike out on my own and have an opportunity to have a job. I mean, the opportunities for video relay service, for example, allow deaf people to make phone calls and to get information that way. But for me, I mean, I don't have that visual access. And so please, please consider all the aspects of this law that can work wonders for people who are deafblind, like myself, the deaf community, and others in the hard of hearing community. And that money, I think, that would be used in Senate Bill 1023 would be very, very readily used, I think, for people in the community if we were to be able to fund the program that way. You know, there are a lot of people who don't come out, who are very isolated in the community, especially deafblind people. And I think if there was a service center or a place for them to go to seek services, they would seek those services, and you would see that there are actually quite a few of us out there. So I do really appreciate your time and attention. Thank you so much. And I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
Thank you both so much for coming. Are there questions for this panel? Nope. When you were talking about coming from the metro area, the D.C. metro area, it made me think of when I served on the National Council on Disability in Washington, D.C. as the parent of a disabled person. I was so surprised and inspired to be in giant rooms of people who were deaf, who were blind, who had physical disability, and to meet attorneys and lobbyists and doctors. And I wanted to pick up all of my friends and all of the children that I know that have all of these disabilities and take them with me so that they could see a future for themselves of professionalism and independence. And it just makes such a difference. And I imagine it was a shock to come to Oregon, where our community and our supports aren't as developed. And I'm sorry about that. And I'm sorry especially for kids and families that are growing up in the communities, because it's hard to be what you can't see. And it's not that it can't happen, it's just that we don't show it here. So thank you very much for speaking to that. And I hope that we can all work together to make that better and make this the type of community that we're able to see in other parts of the country.
Thank you for saying that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you both very much. So, because I have both opened, I think who I have left that has not yet come up is Casey LaFleur, John Cray, and Diane Prairie. And if there are others that I have missed, just wave your hand and we'll make sure that we get everybody up here that has come to speak today. Yes? Great.
I'm missed.
You're missed. And what's your name?
Andrea Cabral.
Andrea Cabral. So we will bring you up next. Anybody else that was missed? Nope. All right. So we'll go through this panel and we'll bring you up next. Although, do we have... We might have an open chair. So, Andrea, why don't you come on up? Andrea, why don't you come on up now? It looks...
John?
Oh, is John here?
Yeah.
John, come on up, and then we'll bring Andrea up next. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I just want to clarify that I'm not testifying. I just put down my name thinking that it was similar to some kind of sign up for documentation for who was in the room. So,
okay.
And I'm in the same position.
You are?
Yes, here in the middle. So.
All right. Thank you. So you can both go back. Thanks for coming and signing in. And now we can bring up Andrea. And just so you know, that happens here all the time.
Hello. My name is Diane Prairie.
Hi.
I would like to find the solution to this problem. So I'd like to tell you a story. I have a 6-year-old deaf boy. He has a cochlear implant. I am the sixth family that this child has been placed with. Hmm. from a period of, from when he was 21 months old. He has been placed in six different families. We are the sixth family that he's been placed with. This should never happen. This child has been with a different family every year. When he came to our house, his behavior, the things we saw, and what he told us about his experience, what he'd been through, those things should never have happened. We have been a certified foster home since 2013. And this is the second deaf child that I've had. We have been in contact with DHS. We have been in contact with different county agencies. And we have we had to receive certifications from each county before we were able to provide foster services. Having Oliver, we would have a point of contact for all over Oregon. We would have a centralized center for deaf families, for people who are curious about, need information and resources about deafness, people who are deaf and hard of hearing themselves. So that's all I'd like to say.
Thank you very much. Andrea.
I don't sign, so you're going to have to interpret for me. Okay. My name's Andrea Cabrill, and I'm one of out of 10 people that has hearing loss. I've been an outreach provider for the Oregon Telecommunication Devices Access Program this month, 17 years. And as you know, we provide equipment and information and services to help anybody with a disability, specifically using telephones that we distribute. Prior to this, I was on the TDAP Advisory Committee for a few years. As you can tell from the group of us here, all communication presents special challenges to anybody with a disability. And if you look around the room and see how many people are actually using this real time, it's really encouraging how fabulous it is. But people who cannot use the telephone or can't communicate become very introverted. They can't make emergency calls. They lose their dignity. They can't communicate, understand, or be understood. I have many reservations about 10, 18, because there are so many different needs by so many different types of disabilities that you see here. I'd like to share a couple of experiences that I've had in my outreach for the past, well, I'm just going to use the past year, only a couple. I'm not going to overwhelm you guys with the different kinds of people that I come across when I hook up their telephones. I had one lady just about a month ago living in a retirement home, totally isolated, wouldn't go to lunch, wouldn't have anything to do with anybody else in the building because she couldn't hear them and she didn't have a way to communicate with them. She waited until either a caregiver or driver or whatever was there to answer her telephone or make her phone calls for her. So I hooked up one of our special caption telephones, and while I was there, the phone rang, and she said for me to take the phone call, and I said, no, you take the phone call because you can use the phone now and you can read what's being said. She handled the whole telephone call, never asked the person to repeat what was said. And when she hung up the phone, we looked at each other and burst into tears. I have had hooked up several people who had never been able to talk to their children on the telephone or ever hear their grandchildren's voice. I've had a lady with, I'm not sure what it was, maybe like Tourette's syndrome or something, and she couldn't modulate her voice on the telephone, and so she'd be screaming into the phone. So we hooked her up with a phone with a voice meter so she could tell how loud she was speaking. Myself, I have hearing loss. I actually have a cochlear implant. Doesn't mean I can hear on the phone, or I hear, I don't understand. My daughter, who was raised with me with knowing I have hearing loss, called me once, and I thought she said, "Mom, I've been in a car accident." And I totally flipped out and asked her 50,000 questions, and she's on the other end, and I can hear her saying, "No, no, 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 no." And what it was, she didn't have a car accident. What happened was she called me by accident. Okay. So those kind of communication things are so important for our needs. And cognitively impaired people, I have a 97-year-old father. He doesn't remember who talked to him. I can go back and I can see what was said on the telephone, who called him, and question him about it. So I just want to say how important being able to see what's being said is. And I thank you for listening to me, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you both very much. Any questions for this panel? Senator Denbrough.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm not sure it's a question for you or if it's for Senator Mona Sanderson, actually, as the sponsor of the bill.
Which one are we talking about?
The 1023, the one that uses the money from the telecommunications, from the Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing Fund. Do we know, is that fund full? I mean, does it have extra dollars in it that could go to other purposes without compromising that program? Because it sounds like it's a very important program.
Well, there are three programs in the there's three programs. One is the Oregon Relay. It has $4.6 million. The other is the Oregon Lifeline. It has $5.2 million in it. And then there's the TDAP, Telecommunications Devices Program, and that has $1.6 million. I've had some very good conversations with PUC, as well as with the DHS, as well as with the proponents of House Bill 3268. This is a totally new. I think with the community assessment that's been done, I think that with now with the deaf and hard of hearing people coming forward, there's a lot that we can gather from everyone on maybe having the funds not necessarily leave PUC. I can't say that. I'm one of those who would like it to stay in PUC, but there are people who want it out of PUC, so I'm not going to get involved with that argument. I just know that there are funds, and if we can have better understanding between DHS, PUC, and what how those funds can be used for those low-income people as well as the hard of hearing and the deaf community, I think there's just a wealth of information we need to have, gather data that we need to gather before we really know what's the right path to take. Does that answer anything?
Yeah. Well, I think you understand what I'm wondering. We don't want to compromise what is working. But if there are dollars available that could be used for some of the important work that we've heard about, it would be good if we could use those dollars. And that's the intent of your work, Senator Mona Sanderson?
Yes. And I put 1023 in very late in the session. I was trying to get a lot more information, was not able to get enough information, so I just dropped the bill as is, and now I've had many conversations, so I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done.
And Senator Bonus Anderson, did you want to say anything about Senate Bill 1018?
1018 is... it's very, it seems like we come up with an idea for one amendment, and then definitions need to be changed. Then we come up with some other ideas, and things need to be changed. So this public hearing was extremely helpful for me, and what I would like to do is go get together now with DHS to assimilate what has been said here, then submit an amendment, then send it out to this probably Chad, Stephen, and Mitch Turbin to get feedback. What my concern is the base bill is extremely expensive. It'll be, what, $4 million maybe? I'm looking at four.
You're welcome to come back up, Mike.
And we're in a budget cycle, a budget crunch. And so what I want is, we have neglected this community too long. And what I want is a bill that I feel can get through. So we've started some good work with the advisory committee. We want to continue that work. But I don't want to, I want more money into the system. And I'll let Mike maybe give us some. Because we've had these conversations.
Chair Gelser, Senator Monis Anderson, we did a high-level analysis of the fiscal impact on Senate Bill 1018 as introduced. And we believe that the fiscal impact is going to come in around $1 million, state general fund. It's not ineligible for any federal matching funds, unfortunately. We understand that there was a previous version which had a fiscal impact in the $3 to $4 million range. I didn't see that version. But our rough estimate as we went through is $1 million, and we'd be happy to prepare an official fiscal upon request.
So, Madam Chair, so is it possible that funds from Senate Bill 1023, if that's worked out, could become available to fund 1018?
There's a lot more work that needs to be done with, I would say, an MOU would need to be done with PUC. This is just too preliminary to say how that money could be used for this in particular.
So, Senator Monis Anderson, if I'm hearing correctly, because I know we're getting towards the end of our first chamber deadline, if I scheduled 1018 out, if we put that on the agenda for, because you're going to be working on some amendments so that we can send it onto Ways and Means, if we schedule that for April 10th, would that give you the time to work through that? And then that gives us a little bit of leeway in case we run into glitches with paperwork.
And I saw Legislative Counsel put his head in, Mark Mayer, and he's probably not here. We've been working with him and in trying to figure out the best route, because if Ways and Means decides they don't want to fund this at all, we'd like to look at other ways that the department could help us continue the progress that we're making in meeting the needs of the community.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much. Anything further, Senator Monis Anderson?
No, the deaf community is extremely special to me. You know, my mother had the German measles when she was pregnant, and that's why my sister was born deaf. And she reads lips very well, so I never learned how to sign language, learn sign language. But the needs of this community is so profound, and she was very lucky in getting a job after she attended Gallaudet College in Washington, D.C., with BPA, Bonneville Power, here, and that's a federal program. And then she went back to live in Washington, D.C., and had a job until she retired with the federal government at the state level. So, again, the East Coast has many more opportunities and deals with the needs of the deaf community so much better than we are in Oregon, and I would love to see us move in that direction.
All right. Well, I just, again, want to thank all of you for coming today, for being part of this hearing, and for continuing your advocacy work. I also want to thank the Oregon Association for the Deaf, which really has done extraordinary work, not just in the Capitol building and not just on what would be considered traditional deaf and hard of hearing issues, but really across the board, working to make sure that there is access for all Oregonians to all public services and public process. It's really encouraging to me to see that hard work. And I think the other thing that I would say that I appreciate is when all of you came and spoke today, really putting it in the frame of these are basic rights that all Oregonians should have access to. And I just encourage you to continue framing your advocacy in that way. That is the right way to do it, and it is true. So thank you for doing that and modeling that. And I know there's another hearing down the hall in a few minutes that we need to get the equipment to. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 1018 and close the public hearing on 1023, and thank you all very much. And thank you to everybody that made all of the accommodations possible today, Matt and Corey and Ledge Administration and Legislative Media. I'm missing a lot of people, and of course,
great.
Our interpreters. So thank you. And we're adjourned. Interpreters. So thank you.